Hello, internet friends. It's Scott McNulty, the host of Random Track. Before we jump into the show, I just wanted to remind you that March 2017 is the incomparable membership pledge drive. That's right. This is the time of the year when we remind you about how you can support the Incomparable Network and this podcast, and that's by becoming a member of the Incomparable. You can sign up for a monthly or annual pledge to support this podcast directly. Here's what you do. Go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. You'll then be asked to pick the shows in the network you'd like to support. If you just check the box for Random Trek, your entire contribution will come to me after a few fees are taken out. Now, I do encourage you to support the other fine podcasts on this network, so don't feel shy about clicking the buttons for the other podcasts. As a thank you for supporting us, members receive extras, including exclusive bonus audio, a live bootleg feed of The Incomparable, and members-only Slack group. And I'm in that Slack group, so if you want to talk to me about Star Trek, that's a great way to do it. Since this is a pledge season, this month many of the shows on the network will be posting bonus episodes just for members. In fact, this very podcast, Random Trek, has a special members-only episode where we talk about the animated series episode Yesteryear. And my guest? Everybody's favorite, Joe Rosensteel. So if you're a member, you get to listen to that. There are contribution levels at $5, $10, and $20 per month, and annual equivalents are available as well. If you're already a member, it's easy to increase your pledge to a higher level and get some special goodies in return. So if you'd like to support us, go to theincomparable.com/members to sign up. Thanks, and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest this morning, because we're recording in the morning unusually, is Andy from Women at Warp. Andy, thank you for joining me.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. So tell the folks a little bit about yourself, Andy.
Sure. So I run a Twitter account called First Time Trek, where on July 4th, 2013, I thought to myself, hey, I should probably watch Star Trek finally, and I'm going to live tweet it. So I started live tweeting my way through Star Trek, and it turned into a thing that I enjoyed to do, and I started podcasting, and now I have a podcast called Women at Warp, where me and a couple of friends talk about the portrayal of women on Star Trek.
Excellent. So where have you, so you started 2013, have you finished? Where are you in your first time watch?
Oh, I am so slow, man. I am so slow. It's bad. I am in season 3 of DS9.
Oh, okay.
And I just finished season 1 of Voyager. So I've been, like, layering them together. And yeah, I'm real slow. I'm real slow.
So are you watching?
Part of it is I just don't want to finish. I'm beginning to really think that that's the biggest problem. Is I just don't want to finish. Eventually, there will be no more Star Trek, and I don't like that idea. So.
Oh no!
Well, and then also, you know, I'm just lazy too. So there's that.
Well, I mean, the new Star Trek series is coming out though, so there'll be a little extra. Eventually, it'll come out, and you can add that to your list.
And I'm going to have to decide if I'm going to do like a special live tweeting extravaganza event now that, because I there's new Star Trek. I mean,
I know, it's
wow,
crazy.
We're really not used to that.
I know. Now, are you watching them in order of broadcast?
Yes, right now I'm watching them in air order. To be honest, it was really just so I could get to Voyager sooner instead of watching all of DS9 and then starting Voyager. I really wanted to get to Janeway, so I was like, I will start watching them in air order.
Well, that seems quite sensible to me. So based on what you've seen so far, if you had to pick a favorite series, which one would you pick?
It's actually DS9. I like the complexity, the political complexity of DS9. My degree is actually in international relations. So, like, all of this kind of, like, really interesting political intrigue and all of the different races and the way that they spy on each other and all of that is super interesting to me. So, I actually really like kind of the moral grayness of DS9. Although I really, really love TNG and I really enjoyed the first season of Voyager. So And I mean, obviously, the original series is classic, and I have a couple of episodes from the original series that are of my favorite of all time. So there's that. But
what episodes are those?
City on the Edge of Forever is one of my favorites. Classic. Arena, Trouble with Tribbles. Mm-hmm. I mean, the usual suspects. Oh. I really like the Enterprise incident, too, because I love the Romulan commander.
Well, I love Romulans, so anything with Romulans in it, sign me up for.
Me too.
And you're on season 3 of Deep Space Nine, so you have to look forward to the Tribbles episode of Deep Space Nine. So,
oh, cool! I didn't know they had a Tribbles episode.
Oh no, I've ruined it. But I won't tell you. I won't tell you any more than that.
Oh, now I'm intrigued. No, you know what? You can spin this as you gave me the push to keep going on DS9 because I haven't watched an episode in a couple weeks. So, I'll watch one today.
Good. I feel I've done my job here, if nothing else.
Go.
Because Deep Space Nine is my favorite Star Trek as well, so, and for the same reasons. So, and luckily, I mean, let's talk about, I'll have one more Star Trek question, and then we could just jump into this episode that we talked about, which people listening know what we're going to talk about, which is a first season Deep Space Nine episode, If Wishes Were Horses, episode number 16. Perhaps not Deep Space Nine at its finest, but it is Deep Space Nine, so we'll talk about it. But before we jump into that, I'm going to ask you to name your favorite character.
Oh, Kira.
Ah.
Kira, definitely.
I
have lots of different favorite characters, but the first person that pops to mind is Kira.
And what do you like about Kira so much?
I like that she doesn't take any shit, and I like that she's complex. Like, she has... One of my favorite things about especially the first two seasons of DS9 is there was a continuing arc for her character that I assume continues on, and that she's this damaged person who went through so much, and she's like learning how to forgive herself and forgive others and move forward in peacetime because of all of her scars from the Bajoran occupation and... You know, the things that she did and the things that she saw. And I just think it's really compelling, and I really dig her. She's a very interesting person.
Yeah, she is one of my favorite Deep Space Nine characters as well. And I think that one of the other reasons I like Deep Space Nine a lot is, you know, it's complex, but it also gives, you know, a lot of people talk about the story arcs that Deep Space Nine has, which are great, but I believe they also have really good character arcs, which is something that this is really the first time in Star Trek that we get actual character arcs. There's a little bit in TNG, none in the original series, but Voyager brings some, certainly later seasons, and Deep Space Nine as well.
Yeah, I think you start to see the switch from, like, TOS was, you know, a very different era of television in which everything had to be pretty self-contained.
Uh-huh.
And then when you start getting into the DS9 Voyager era, it's when TV started to shift to more serialized storytelling. And so you do get to have character arcs. Odo has one. Bashir has one, which it was kind of jarring to go back to season one Bashir and remember what a douche he was.
Oh man, season one Bashir has really ruined Bashir for me, just in general. Deep Space Nine is one of the rare Star Trek shows in which I don't dislike any of the characters, but Bashir is borderline.
The first season of DS9, I spent all my time tweeting that they should beam Julian into space and just leave him there. I was like, oh, God, why are you so awful? But everybody kept telling me he got better. And I was like, don't tell me that. I'll find that out on my own. But, yeah, he has already gotten a lot better. I'm in season 3 now. And, I mean, it is really cool to see character growth on that level. But then you go back to season 1 and you're like, ah, why?
And this episode is, you know, a
peak
perfect
Bashir.
Exactly, yes, because his defining characteristics, I guess, in season 1 really are he is like a little puppy who's excited to be on the frontier, but he's also completely and creepily obsessed with Dax.
Yes, super thirsty and patronizing.
Yes, that's that I think sums him up. And this episode is the perfect example of that. So we should just jump into this episode. This is... not my favorite episode of Deep Space Nine.
How diplomatic of you.
It is, we usually at the end, I ask people what they thought of this episode and, not this episode, but the episode we watched, and then I share my opinion. I'm going to, share my opinion of what I thought of this episode before we even talk about it, which is to say it is bad.
That's less diplomatic, but I like your straightforwardness.
And, you know, because it's, I feel like it is interesting. What they do on one level, which is they play with this Star Trek trope of there's like this seemingly some kind of spatial distortion thing, rift, that's causing weird stuff to happen in Deep Space Nine. And it turns out, spoiler alert, that that's not actually what was happening. It was just what they thought was happening so that they manifested itself, which is kind of an interesting idea. But it's also one of the most infuriating types of Star Trek episodes where at the end they don't explain anything. Why any of this happened, and nothing has really changed.
Yep. Yep.
And so you think to yourself, why did I watch this episode of Star Trek?
Yep.
But at least we get to see Rumpelstiltskin, a baseball player, and Sex Kitten Dax.
Yes, Sex Kitten Dax. That's what we at Women at Warp call her.
That's right, and I have adopted it. I was going to call her Doppelganger Dax, but I think Sex Kitten Dax is more apropos. But it is interesting. So, saying all of that, I will say that the opening scene of this Deep Space Nine episode also kind of highlights why I like Deep Space Nine so much, because it is Odo and Quark, so no humans, no Starfleet characters, and they're just talking about, you know, how Deep Space Nine is changing, which I you don't see that on any other Star Trek show. You wouldn't really see an opener with no Starfleet uniforms or no Starfleet characters. So that's exciting.
Yeah. When I was rewatching, I was like, oh, I actually really like this cold open. For one thing, it's my favorite thing about Odo, which is that he spends all of his time complaining about Quark while simultaneously hanging out with Quark, which is so hilarious to me. I love how much they pretend not to like each other while simultaneously being best friends. And it's just, it's a cool idea, like, how much of imagination is tied to species. I mean, they kind of go into that later, too, when they make a joke about how Vulcans don't have imagination, which I don't know if I agree, but okay. And just the kind of culture clash there, and Quark trying to decide how to fit his, you know, new station and new species and new changing political landscape into how do I sell this, which is a very Quark thing to do. And yeah, I like this cold open. It's pretty good, and it sets up, you know, the theme of the episode, which a lot of cold opens don't. And I like it when, you know, you have this conversation that's seemingly just some character building, and then it actually ties into the theme of this episode. The problem, of course, being that the theme of the episode gets completely lost, and we don't actually explore it all that much. The cold open does a decent job of setting it up. It's just the rest of the episode lets it down.
It's true. It is sad. And I also like about the open that they are, Quark is like, oh, I need to install more holosuites so that I can, you know, get these humans to play in my holosuites. And Odo's like, oh, just more sexual adventures. And he's like, no, family entertainment is where the future is, Odo. And I just thought it was refreshing because obviously the holosuites, you imagine, are mostly designed for people to live out adult-themed fantasies, which is something that you never talk about on TNG in the holodecks, except maybe, you know, incidentally with Barclay. It's kind of...
Yeah, it actually, I mean, this is a good... The holosuites are a good example of why I like DS9, because in TNG, they introduce the holodeck, and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, I know exactly what I would be using the holodeck for, but, like, nobody wants to say it. And they're all like, let's, you know, throw up some forest and walk through the forest. I'm like, yeah, okay, bro. And then DS9 comes in, and Quark's just like, sex, man. Obviously. That's obviously what we're going to use the holosuites for. And that just makes me laugh. It's a little more realistic than TNG is. I love the optimism of TNG and kind of the, I don't know, idealism. I love it. I think it's beautiful, but DS9 is just so much more hardwired into reality, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
But I would also go and play baseball there, too. So there's that.
And that's what Jake does. He's off playing baseball, which, you know, I don't understand. I think that, of course, Captain Sisko or Commander Sisko in this episode is obsessed with baseball. Nobody else is really cares about baseball. Jake, being his son, I guess, is, I wouldn't say forced, but he's exposed to baseball, so he shares a similar interest with his father. And this episode, we also find out that baseball was discontinued because nobody liked it. So
that's so sad. That's awful. I do love the idea of, like, baseball as a bonding technique because, you know, that it is this idea in American culture that, you know, you have your dad and your son throwing the baseball around and stuff like that, and they kind of give it a nice twist in the future. But then the thought of baseball just dying out, I'm like, but how? I love baseball.
Well, I go to one baseball game every year just so that I can visit the Citizens Bank Park here in Philadelphia and have eat ice cream out of a small baseball helmet. So that's why I go. But so I would not be helping the future of baseball is what I'm saying. I'm part of the problem. Speaking of problematic, the other scene in the opening is Bashir and Dax having some sort of meal together.
Thirst. Yes. The thirst is real. I mean, it's so awkward and cringy. Bashir's just like, I love you so much. And she's like, yeah, okay. You say that. And season one Bashir is so gross. He hits on everyone, mm-hmm. which doesn't bother me, by the way. Like, flirt with whoever you want to flirt with. But he's so disingenuous about it. It's just like, oh, but no, I love you. Do you? Right. Do you really? I don't think so. I think you think she's super hot, which no one blames you.
Yes, she is.
And I think you want to hook up with her, which no one blames you. But just so creepy. And the fact that she's already been like, nah, I'm not into this. And then he just keeps pushing. No, back off. Back off.
Yeah, at least Kirk was, you know, he was upfront with his infatuations. He fell in love very easily, but he generally was like, you know, I am going to romance you and leave you. And Bashir is like, I love you, Dax. You are the reason I wake up every morning. And she's like, well, what about the beta Z that you hooked up with last week? Well, she was a pale imitation of you. And she's like, what about this other woman? And he's like, well, also pale imitation.
How rude to those other women.
Like, I know.
That's so rude. That you're right. Kirk was a player, but in a way that I can respect. Like, Kirk was the kind of guy that would be like, pick you up and then make you pancakes in the morning and then have a nice time. You know, he was straightforward. He wasn't, I don't know, like, he didn't play games. And he was sincere in his feelings. Like, he never pretended to feel anything that he didn't feel.
Right, exactly. He wasn't selling a story that he was not participating in. Whereas Bashir is kind of constructing this reality where he's just pining away all alone in his room with, you know, thinking about Dax and doing nothing else.
Writing poetry about her eyes.
That's right. When he is basically making his way through the station. Oh, Bashir. What's wrong with you? But this is, of course, so they're setting these things up. So Jake is playing baseball. Bashir is hitting on Dax. And then we see the O'Brien family. And Miles is reading Molly a bedtime story, Rumpelstiltskin in particular. So this is all set up.
Yeah, I have to say that O'Brien is a good dad, man. Like, I would love – he did the voices. It was so cute. I was sitting there like, not very many parents nail the bedtime story. You really have to get into it. You have to commit. And I really like this, like, small moment that we have with Miles and Keiko afterwards because we get – I mean, people make fun of them and their relationship so much and – yeah, maybe they're not the most romantic of couples sometimes, but every once in a while you get this moment of just real human feeling between them, and we get that before they ruin it with Rumpelstiltskin.
It is true. I always enjoy having a little slice of family life on Deep Space Nine. So, you know, Jake and Sisko, they, you know, have some lovely moments. The O'Brien family is very nice. But you've got to imagine that's probably like the 500th time Miles has read that story to Molly, and that makes it even more impressive that he continues to do the voice and everything, because she knows her parts, where she her part is to yell out Rumpelstiltskin's name. So it was very cute.
I also think it's funny that Molly comes out and she's like, Rumpelstiltskin is in my room. And I'm like, he definitely is. He definitely yes. is. Like, there's no fake out there. They're just like, yep, this is the shenanigans. There's no way there's no Rumpelstiltskin in her room. And he's like, oh, sweetie, it's just make-believe. I'm like, no, it's not. He's definitely there. The first time I watched, I was like, yep. This is the setup.
Would have been a better choice to have Rumpelstiltskin not be there and have him appear later to set up some tension. But you were right. In fact, he is just standing there hanging out. And then you think, that's unusual. Rumpelstiltskin is usually not on Deep Space Nine.
Shenanigans! Dun, dun, right. dun.
This is what we are in for, folks. Rumpelstiltskin clomping around Deep Space Nine. I will say this about this episode. Rumpelstiltskin looks pretty good. So thumbs up for Rumpelstiltskin.
I think one of the problems with this episode is it feels so much like they started with the idea of, like, how weird would it be if we put Rumpelstiltskin in Ops and then, like, worked backwards?
Yeah,
like, how do we get to a story where we can have Rumpelstiltskin in Ops? And that's not how you should be building your story.
No, and I feel like Rumpelstiltskin... Sure, he looks like Rumpelstiltskin. It's very incongruous, so you get that kind of moment of, it's Rumpelstiltskin. But he doesn't do much of anything. He teleports around. He threatens to take Molly, but he doesn't really do anything. He's not super menacing. I always feel like Rumpelstiltskin's one of the more menacing fairy tale people, but in this episode, he did not have that menace, for me at least.
Yeah, there's this moment where Keiko acts like she's afraid of him. Like, seriously, Keiko stared down like a steely-eyed Kai Winn. Like, Keiko's not afraid of Rumpelstiltskin. Come on.
She could take him.
No. Keiko has a spine of steel. She's not cowering, holding her child, and being like, oh, no. No, I don't buy that at all.
No. And then so security comes in. They are Starfleet security. So ineffective. They show up and he teleports one time and then they're like, well, I guess we can never catch him. And they let him loose amongst the station.
Oh, well. I mean, every time I try and think of a more incompetent moment for Starfleet security, the only thing I can come up with is in Space Bond and Ninja Cat, otherwise known as Assignment Earth.
Mm.
The ninja cat actually takes down Starfleet security in the transporter room, and she's a tiny cat. So, I mean, really, at that point, Rumpelstiltskin's got a shot.
That is true. At least he can teleport, unlike a cat.
I love it. She like jumps, and like they all fall down. It's amazing. That's the best episode.
Yes, that is a good episode. Much better than, in fact, if wishes were hearts.
Actually, this is a good example of an episode that I would usually like. I'm a big fan of what I like to call the awesomely bad episode. So, mm-hmm. like, there's another episode, I think it's in this season, it might be in season 2, called Storyteller, where O'Brien basically Care Bear stares like a cloud monster while wearing a Hawaiian dad shirt. That's one of my favorite episodes ever. Okay, that's one of my favorite episodes. I love that episode. This is an example of an episode that's just bad. It is not awesomely bad.
No.
Which makes me sad, because if you had told me Rumpelstiltskin and Ops, I would have been like, man, that's so up my alley, but it really is not.
And they could have, I feel like they could have done a lot with Rumpelstiltskin, because Rumpelstiltskin could theoretically be like a Q character, right? He has mysterious powers, he is a little menacing, he could be a little goofy, but I really don't feel any of that from this Rumpelstiltskin. Of course, I should say, partially in Rumpelstiltskin's defense, he is not the only figment of people's imaginations that becomes real. So he has to share the scene with Buck, who is from the, what is it, the London Lions, maybe?
Kings,
there you go. Who is, I guess, the last great baseball player who Jake has been practicing his... baseball techniques with. And so he becomes real. And, of course, Julian Bashir, in a kind of a creepy scene, is sleeping. It's unclear to me, was he sleeping in sick bay or in his quarters? I couldn't quite tell where he was.
But I thought it was his quarters, but I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention. So
he was sleeping somewhere without a blanket in his uniform, which I thought was weird.
As you do, as you do.
I get maybe he's just taking a nap. I should not judge.
I mean, to be fair, how does he get in and out of that uniform, really?
It's so true.
It must be pretty tough to take it on and off, and it's spandex. Might as well sleep in it.
I imagine they just beam into their uniforms every morning. Because we all know Miles O'Brien's very good at transporting, so I'm sure he stops by everyone's quarters and beams them into their jumpsuits. But so he's dreaming. Obviously, he's having an active and pleasurable dream. And then we notice a second set of arms and hands kind of caressing him, which I guess he's in super deep sleep because he does not immediately wake up. And then he wakes up, and of course, it is Dax.
Sex kitten Dax.
Sex kitten Dax. He doesn't know that at the time. He thinks it might be regular Dax, and although everyone watching knows it's clearly not regular Dax.
I do give him some props for at least like being like, are you sure what's happening? Like, he knows this is out of character, so he at least questions it, but then he's like, yeah, okay, cool.
He does ask. He's like, are you sure this is what's happening? We shouldn't do this. He puts up a lot of resistance, and then she...
Go ahead.
She continues her advances, because, of course, she's a figment of his imagination, and that is what she does.
Yeah, it's pretty much his only redeemable moment in this episode.
Yes. Well, he also tries to save her when she gets a concussion, so that's kind of good, doing his job. they start making out and all this stuff, and well, that's really all we see. And then we see, you know, things are going crazy. But I guess we should also talk about the big reveal, right? Everyone is summoned to ops, well, the senior crew. And this is where Bashir thinks, great, Dax, this is all, who put you up to this? Was O'Brien kind of paid you to do this prank? And now we're all
O'Brien would totally do that.
He would. It's not a bad, assumption on his part. and that's also, I really like, I've said this before, I like Bashir, I don't really like Bashir by himself. But I like Bashir when he is with O'Brien, because I think they have a good relationship. And certainly when he's with Garrick, I think that that's great.
That's one of the reasons why I love Storyteller so much, because it's basically O'Brien and Bashir hanging out together. And at first, O'Brien's like, oh my god, this Bashir dude is the worst.
Yes.
And then they like bond over attempted murder and like being worshipped and stuff. And it's cool.
That's, you know, how many male friendships begin. You bond over attempted murder, and you just carry on from there. But, yeah, so they go up to ops. Bashir, Sex Kitten Dax is there. Rumpelstiltskin is there, of course. O'Brien, everybody's like, what the heck is going on? So they turn to Dax, and they're like, Dax, can you... does this have anything to do with the weird sensors readings that you experienced? And she's like, I don't know how to work a sensor. I don't know what you're talking about. And then, of course, slowly up the very ineffective but dramatic ops elevator turbo shift lift thingy, the real Dax is revealed. And now we know that this doppelganger Dax is just a figment of Julian's sexy time dreams.
Thoron emissions?
Yes, that's exactly what she's...
What are Thorons?
I don't understand.
Okay, so this... Now we reach the reason I hate Sex Kitten Dax. I am with Dax completely when she's like later. She's like, everybody has fantasies. It's totally fine. We actually are, you know... I mean, this should be a private thing for you. I agree with all of that. I have zero problem with the fact that he is fantasizing sexually about Dax because, come on, man, he is human. And fine. All of that's fine. The thing that I don't like is that apparently his sexy time version of Dax doesn't science. And that is the sexiest thing about Dax, is that she's like so badass and cool and smart and interesting. And he basically just stripped all of that away. And that makes me go, ugh, ugh, ugh.
Yes.
My Sex Kitten Dax would be talking about Thor on emissions. I'm just saying.
I agree. I think that's why, I mean, obviously, there's no getting around the fact that, and nor should we, that Dax is very attractive. But part of the attraction is that she is super smart and she knows what she's doing. And if you take that away from her and you get Sex Kitten Dax, she's just not as attractive. She's not a fully fleshed out character. So she's just kind of like, you know, ooh, tell me what to do, Julian. You're so handsome. How do you doctor?
Tell me more about your doctoring. and that just makes me super disappointed in Bashir, to be honest. Like, really, you're going to have a fantasy version of Dax, and she's stripped of everything that makes her Dax, except for her face. So, I mean, that just makes me, Oh, Julian.
So sad. Yes, but, and then, so now they need to figure out what the heck is going on because it's snowing on the promenade. There's, an emu that they call something else, but
I love that part where Odo is like trying to like fit, like wrangle emus is my favorite part of the episode. Just like, so he's so Odo, he's so grumpy. And he was like, why the hell did I take this job? This is the worst job. Why are there emus? It's snowing. Everything sucks. That's my favorite part of the episode.
Can't we get the Cardassians back? This did not happen with the Cardassians.
They were easier in some ways.
It's true. I mean, especially for, you know, Odo, they were very clear cut. He knew where he was. He knew what he was supposed to be doing. The Starfleet makes it all a little gray.
Yeah, definitely.
But now they're like, okay, we are Starfleet officers. We need to science the heck out of this to figure out what's going on. And so they find out there's like some kind of rift, of course, and it's expanding, and they need to figure out what's going on. And so they shoot a probe into it that doesn't really tell them anything. And then Rumpelstiltskin appears, and he's like, I can fix it for you if you give me Molly.
Yes. So we get into the boring science shenanigans part of the episode where the sciencing doesn't even make any sense, but it, you know, we devote a lot of time to talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just sitting there like, yep, okay, probes, got it. And it goes on way too long.
It does.
Then apparently O'Brien forgets that he's a dad and just kind of stares blankly and doesn't say, no, you can't have my daughter, you weird Rumpelstiltskin thing. Which is all very out of character.
It's true. I like to think maybe he was just so enraged at the very idea that he lost the power of speech.
There you go. That's a better headcanon.
But the Sisko is like, no, we're not giving you Molly.
Well, obviously.
That's just not going
to
happen.
The fact that they actually tried to milk some tension in that scene, like, ooh, is O'Brien going to give Molly to Rumpelstiltskin? Like, what? No, he is not going to do that. Why?
Oh. Yeah, and that's the other problem with this episode. There's really no tension or believable tension. They try to manufacture some, but
can you imagine? I almost wish they had. I almost wish they were like, "Bye, Molly."
Sorry, there are a lot of people on the station that's about to destroy it. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. The many.
I mean, that would have actually turned this episode into a legend. I mean,
that is true.
There you go, we fixed it.
And then it could have been like, when Wesley Crusher joined the Traveler, and then he came back. Molly would just join Rumpelstiltskin, and then she could come back in future seasons as a Rumpelstiltskin.
We missed a golden opportunity to have this be one of those gray moral decisions that the fandom discusses for decades afterwards. Should Molly have been sacrificed in Rumpelstiltskin? Think of the think pieces.
It would have been epic. But
We could have had it all, man.
It was so close, but it was not. And this is at the point which Sisko is like, wait a second.
I figured it all out.
That's right. I figured it all out immediately. Well, not immediately. After, frankly, too long a time, because it's clear what's going on. We don't know why it's going on, but their figments of their imagination are becoming reality. And Dax, early in the episode, says, well, it's probably this thing that happened once, and it probably should do these things. And then, lo and behold, they find that thing. It does the things they think it should do. It expands the way they think it should. And Sisko's like, nothing's happening. Lower the shields. And everyone's like, you're crazy, Cisco. Ah! even though it is obvious that he's right. And it turns out he is right. Hooray. There is no rift. They were just making it up as they went along.
Definitely the best way to pay off tension is to have your main character calmly explain what's happening for like 3 minutes. That's definitely, I mean, that's one of the writing tricks of the trade, really.
It
and
is
then
textbook.
Especially very helpful to have everything be negated. So all of your tension is gone. What little you managed to pull up is now just gone dead on the floor. Just, oh, it was all in our heads.
Yeah, nothing. We were never really in any danger. None of this actually has any impact on our lives. Nobody cares at all. Yeah, which I think is one of my least favorite things that happens in Star Trek, because you get that sometimes in like time travel episodes or alternate reality episodes, right, where at the end they're like, oh, none of that really happened. And then you're like, oh, writers, why?
It was all a dog's dream.
That's right. We don't like it.
Sorry, that was a deep cut about Battlefield Baseball, which is this amazing Japanese movie in which there's a lot of ninjas and baseball playing, and then in the end it was all the dream of a dog. It's an amazing movie. Anyway, sorry.
I have never seen this movie.
I don't know how easy it is to find.
I'm on the internet. You can find anything on the internet. So this is where this episode angers me on a couple of levels. The whole I feel cheated because none of it was real. I mean, obviously, I understand none of Star Trek is real, but within the context of the show, it was not real. And then, you know, Sisko's like, okay, well, clearly you guys are aliens. So, Buck, tell me why this happened. And he's like, well, this is part of our mission to, you know, we were just kind of observing you to figure out how you act, and we wanted to learn what this imagination of yours meant, and we're fascinated by you. And Sisko's like, well, tell us more of your people. And Buck is like, well, maybe we'll tell you in a year.
Nah.
What? And then we never speak of this again.
Right, so they introduce these aliens that have a lot of power, a lot. And they show up and they kind of wreak havoc for a little while and then they leave.
With no explanation. They don't even identify themselves. They're just like, peace out, homies. We'll see you in a year. And
but then they don't.
And then they don't. And it's so infuriating to me. That's how I felt at the end of this episode. I was infuriated. And this is not the first time I've seen this episode, so I was infuriated again.
Aww. I liked it better the second time around because I wasn't expecting anything.
Well, that is good. I think that this is one of those episodes that's true. If you know going in, it's not very good. You can at least enjoy the emu. You can enjoy Odo and Quark talking to each other. You can enjoy the little girl who plays Molly not doing a bad job in some episodes.
Yeah, she's super cute.
She's very cute. And she's very young. And sometimes they give her too much to do. But this episode, I think they gave her exactly the right amount to do. Basically, she says Rumpelstiltskin a couple times and then says, ah, he's in my room. Perfect. And then she looks frightened on Ops when...
Well, apparently that was real. If I'm remembering correctly, when I was at in Vegas, Hannah Hatte, is that her name? She was there and she was talking about how one of her earliest memories, the first thing she remembers about DS9 was how scared she was of the guy playing Rumpelstiltskin, which I thought was a pretty amazing story.
That it makes sense. I mean, he would be scary to a kid. He is not scary.
Yeah, absolutely.
To
anybody
else, but he's like this strange looking little creature that's running around. I could totally see how that would be scary. And perhaps some mean producers would be like, don't let Molly get or Hannah get familiar with the actor playing Rumpelstiltskin so we can get that real emotion on screen.
Oh my gosh, that would be the worst. I hope he didn't do that.
I'm just making that up. I don't know. I don't want to start rumors. Internet, if it is not true, don't blame me.
You're about to get a bunch of angry emails, man.
That's right. From
how dare you malign my directing?
Sorry, I didn't know. But that is the smallest problem I have with this episode. So I did like, you like the Ibu. I liked the snow on the promenade. I thought that was fun. So watch this whole episode just to see that 2-second scene of Odo scowling at snow.
Or you could skip it and go to YouTube and just Odo and Emus snow.
That's probably a better use of your time.
It's probably on there somewhere.
I'm sure
it is. There's also a weird subplot where Kira is like almost set on fire. And
oh, yeah.
Okay, why?
But nothing. Yeah, she's like, oh, no, the lower pylon's gone. And she calls Ops and she's like, freaking out. And then Sisko calls her back and he's like, is everything okay? And she's like,
yeah, totally.
It's fine.
Never mind. Actually, now that I think about it, that scene is pretty much a metaphor for the entire episode in which something boring happens inexplicably and then none of it mattered.
It is true. I did like the fire that they had shooting at her. It didn't do anything, but I thought it looked cool. But yeah, inexplicable. I guess that was her. So I guess we should. So she imagines the fire, O'Brien, Rumpelstiltskin, Bashir, Sex Kitten Dex, Jake, his baseball player, Quark has some Dabo girls that seem quite interested in him, which he does anyway, but these are ones he doesn't have to pay, one assumes. I don't think Odo... Oh, no, Odo imagines Quark
Quark in jail. Yes. That is a good moment. Everything good about this episode has Odo.
It is true. So there's like a minute scene where Odo is quite pleased to look on his monitor and see Quark in his one of his cells.
You could do that in real life. You know that, right? Odo, Quark definitely belongs in jail. You could arrest him.
That's right.
Put him in jail.
This is not a far-fetched fantasy, Odo. You could exactly. Just make it happen legitimately.
I do think it's interesting that, we have all of these different kinds of imaginations, and you've got the two women characters are imagining, horrible physical danger, and the men are Dabo girls and Sex Kitten Dicks.
And a baseball player.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's Jake, so, I guess it could have been Sisko,
Sisko. Yeah, it's unclear who dreamed up the baseball player.
And here lies in, the wasted potential. So the concept of this episode isn't terrible. The idea of your imagination coming to life, that could actually turn into some character introspection that could have been quite interesting. But I think the mixture of having really boring fantasies and really obviously boring fantasies like Sex Kitten Dax is not interesting. You could have chosen some cool stuff for them. And I'm not sure if it was just they didn't have time, or it was just poorly written, or they didn't have a strong enough sense of these characters to really delve deep into them yet. But I can't think it's that, because, we had some early Kira episodes that were really good. I just feel like this concept could have been saved easily, and it just didn't come together for whatever reason. And it ends up just being both boring and annoying.
I agree. And I am looking at Memory Alpha because I wanted to. I wondered what the kernel that hatched this story was, and basically, apparently, it was somebody pitched Jake brings a baseball player home from the holodeck. So that's okay. how we started this episode, which is to me, I am not a baseball fan, but to me, that is the least interesting part of a very uninteresting episode. So.
I actually think that not the baseball so much, but the kind of melancholy Sisko has over this bygone era that has disappeared actually could have been interesting. It just didn't actually manifest in an interesting way.
Right. Yeah. It was just a throwaway line. And, I still like baseball. I'm sad that you don't play it anymore.
this episode did give us the baseball.
It's true. So we should thank. And apparently, in the original script, Rumpelstiltskin was going to be a leprechaun, and Cole Meany said that's racist. So we're not going to do that.
How dare you?
How dare you, sir?
How dare you?
And they said, "Fine, Rumpelstiltskin. No pot of gold. no rainbow.
I mean, what would they have had him do? Like, I'll give you a pot of gold for Molly.
You know, you're always after me lucky Mollies. yeah, so this episode, I think, dear listener, if you watch this episode before you listen to this podcast, I apologize, because it's not very good. But if you liked it, great. But I did not. But what do you think of this overall, Andy?
Poorly written and poorly executed. Some fun moments, but mostly boring.
I think that sums it up nicely. But there's also an emu, so, you know, take the good with the bad.
Absolutely. There's always something good, unless it's Nemesis.
That is very true. Because sometimes, you know, when I say not so nice things about Star Trek, some people think, well, why do you host a Star Trek podcast if you hate Star Trek? And I don't. Obviously, I love Star Trek. I will watch bad Star Trek, although Nemesis is in a league of its own, and enjoy it. I got enjoyment seeing these characters, but this was just not a good episode. But, yep. Andy, you were a great guest. Thank you for joining me and talking about a not-so-great episode of Deep Space Nine.
Absolutely. It was hella fun. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.